Good morning, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell looks at the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's the Heather McCoy Show. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Jake Vermas speaks with Michelle Peñalosa about her collection of poems, former possessions of the Spanish Empire. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. S.W. Conzer speaks with Gary and Ann Lundgren of Ashland, who've produced an independent feature entitled Phoenix, Oregon, a comedic look at midlife struggles in the rural Northwest.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Feet to the Fire campaign and protest Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside a different county courthouse and calls for justice for those lost to police violence and hate crimes. Again, that's Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse, 807 Main Street in Oregon City. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion, on Saturday, August 24th at 2 p.m. at the Central Library in Portland. The movie will be followed by a panel discussion about the Black diaspora. Again, that's Bound, Africans vs. African Americans movie screening and discussion, on Saturday, August 24th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Central Library, 801 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Dear 2029, I'm really sorry. No, I mean it, really. Who knew? Hey, hold on a minute. Keep your shirt on when you're talking to me, 2029. I understand your rage. Well, no, I can't truly experience it for 10 years or so, but I get it, okay? Just try to understand. Look, 2029, we're not going to be able to talk at all unless you simmer down. Okay. Thank you. 2029, back in the year 2019, people were trying to do something. Yes, we were. There was Bernie Sanders and 350.org and Extinction Rebellion, and we had demonstrations that... Well, no, we didn't really shut things down. No, we didn't. Okay, well, you have to understand that in those days, people couldn't imagine that it was going to get this bad. We had reputable scientists telling us that, well, they didn't phrase it exactly this way, but they were saying these changes wouldn't happen until 2070 or 2050 or something, so we didn't expect anything really worse than, you know, Hurricane Sandy and Maria, because puny? What do you mean puny? They caused tens of billions of damage, hitting New York and Puerto Rico. Okay, all right, 2029, they were puny. Okay, I admit it, puny, by comparison. Yes, it's true, Hurricane Debbie should have been a wake-up call. I mean, Miami was a big, big town, and they were already building up the roads to build with this sort of thing, to deal with it. So we just didn't expect a 25-foot storm surge and 215-mile-per-hour winds and 40 inches of rain, and, well, we didn't. Sure. Okay, sure, 2029, we had heard of Harvey, you know, the great hurricane of 1780, but look, we just couldn't imagine an even bigger storm hitting such a populated area. you remember, I mean, Miami's gone now, but every house and hundreds of buildings were wiped off the map. All of a sudden, 60,000 dead, 200,000 injured, and of course, the firestorm and the dengue fever and the leptospirosis and the cholera, and I don't need to tell you. Well, when the Miami Tower went over, we couldn't believe it. Well, I said I was sorry, 2029. Sure, the economy crashed. It was still grotesquely maldistributed, and there were those quadrillions in derivatives unpaid after that. We kind of knew we were going to pay for that, but it's hard to imagine those things in 2019. Why? Well, because I guess it's an existential thing. You know, probably we evolved that way to fail to react to something that's unimaginably deadly, because there's probably some value in just living your life. And, well, sure, 2029, we were selfish. I admit it. We were selfish and we had a lack of imagination. We were obsessed with getting rid of Trump back then. He was sort of professionally irritating. He openly crowed about the racism that fuels the economy, and at the time he seemed, I know this sounds stupid, he seemed even worse than the ineluctable juggernaut of climate disaster. He was a threat to me personally as a transgender woman. It was hard to focus on the future. The anthrax was a bit of a shock. It was about 2019 that some of us had become, we'd just become aware that the widespread fracking was contributing to worldwide methane, that it was the principal contributor. So almost no one added together the effects of, you know, all that methane and 10% more moisture in the air gathering that heat more quickly and soot on the glaciers, you know, and warmer water under the Greenland ice cap in Antarctica and wildfire smoke and loss of forest wildfires and tundra fires and the CO2 and methane emissions from the melted permafrost and the loss of ice albedo from the disappearance of the Arctic surface ice. Well, okay, 2029, we had heard of tipping points, sure. But it just came as a surprise. I know it seems stupid, 2029, but we thought Miami would always be there. Not as a popular idiomatic synonym for the odor of putrefaction, no. Not as an uninhabitable, drowned, toxic site, but as a city, sure. By the way, if you'd like to read a good, well-researched dystopian novel, there's Per Fagering's book. It's entitled Jack Maloney's Century. I think it's still available. Here's something bizarre. You know, now that I'm climbing down from my rhetorical stump, a tropical storm has formed from a disturbance off Boston and moved east. Now, that should sound pretty weird to you if you follow hurricanes at all. That's just utterly weird. Meanwhile, another disturbance is forming much further south, so good luck to everyone on the Atlantic and Gulf coasts this year. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I do want to talk about the climate. I have a few related and unrelated news items, and then I believe that we will have time to talk about Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal. Now, there's been a Green New Deal in this form and that. There was a rather abortive effort to bring it to Congress, which is intentionally brought up early and tromped on by the Republicans. A meaningless gesture on their part. We knew that they had the majority in the Senate, but Bernie Sanders has now come up with his Green New Deal in detail, and I think that it is a significant document, and I think that it will have an effect on the society, much as his statements about health care and the minimum wage have had an effect on the society, whether he gains the presidency or not. So I'll be getting to that. First, why 500 million bees have died in Brazil in 3 months. In the state of Rio Grande do Sul, 400 million dead bees were found, with beekeepers in 4 states in Brazil reporting the mass deaths. That's from the BBC. They say researchers have blamed the use of pesticides. Bees are a really important role in the food chain, they write, with about one-third of the food we eat relying on pollination, mainly by bees. This includes fruits and vegetables such as avocados, broccoli, and cherries. The main cause of death for these bees has been the use of pesticides containing products that are banned in Europe, such as neonicotinoids and fipronil. In the same year that the EU imposed an almost total ban, Brazil lifted restrictions on these pesticides despite opposition from environmentalists who called it the poison package. So around the world, things aren't looking good for bees. Skipping ahead, President Donald Trump's administration announced Wednesday that it intends to hold migrant families in detention for the duration of their immigration court proceedings, with no limit on the amount of time migrant children can be held in custody. So this is, speaking for myself, an extension of the cruelty that the Trump administration has decided to use to deal with U.S. aggression-induced and climate-induced migration. Returning to the article, the new rule announced by Acting Department of Homeland Security Chief Kevin McAllenhan would replace a decades-old court agreement limiting the amount of time the government is allowed to detain a migrant child to 20 days. That was called the Flores Settlement Agreement. Skipping ahead, the new rule requires approval from a federal judge before it can go into effect. It would establish standards for conditions in detention centers and abolish the 20-day limit for holding migrant families in custody, a cap which has frequently prompted Trump to complain about what he calls a catch and release of migrants in the U.S. That's from corporate news media. Goes on at some length, but the basis of it is that the racist cruelty from the Trump administration and its 63 million enthusiastic supporters, well, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration, however many million are left, goes on and is increasing. In Brazil, public outrage is mounting over massive wildfires that have consumed parts of the Amazon for several weeks. This is from Radio Havana, Cuba. The hashtag #PrayForAmazonia trended Tuesday as images of the raging blazes circulated on social media. The skies over the city of... I want to say it right this time. I probably won't. Sao Paulo went dark for around an hour during the middle of the day Monday after winds carried in smoke from the forest fires over 1,500 miles away. The fires are thought to be directly caused or exacerbated by agricultural exploitation and deforestation. Brazil's Space Research Agency has recorded nearly 73,000 wildfires so far this year, an 83% increase from the same period last year. And speaking for myself, you may have heard of the fires last year. They were pretty bad. Well, they're that much worse. And the photographs from Sao Paulo are pretty shocking. When they say the skies went dark, they mean night dark. The lights came on. It looked like night. It was the middle of the day. It really got people's attention. Returning to the Radio Havana Cuba article, far-right Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has worked to deregulate and open up the Amazon for agribusiness, logging, and mining since he came into office in January, despite international concerns over the environmental impacts of deforestation. Recent data shows that Brazil lost more than 1,300 square miles of forest cover this year. Climate scientists say the protection of the Amazon rainforest is crucial in the global effort to fight climate change. A bit of an understatement, I believe. All right, now you're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and I want to get to the nitty-gritty here, which is, as I was saying before, that Bernie Sanders' campaign has released in detail his Green New Deal. And there's been a little bit of coverage in the press, but I would say very little. The Daily Beast, for example, scarcely did more than mention it. Although they put it fairly up, they put it above the fold, I'll give them that. Not much in the way of details. There was a bit more analysis on... on Huffington Post. They wrote, Democratic presidential hopeful Bernie Sanders released a sweeping $16.3 trillion climate plan on Thursday, vowing to create 20 million jobs and completely zero out planet heating emissions by 2050. The proposal outlines easily the most ambitious vision for a Green New Deal to date, with calls to massively expand public ownership of everything from power generation to groceries. With Washington Governor Jay Inslee ending his climate-centered bid for the Democratic nomination a day earlier, the plan vaults the Vermont senator ahead of his 2020 rivals on what's emerging as the defining policy issue of the Democratic primary. They write, at a moment when record wildfires are raging from the Amazon to the Arctic and Greenland is losing up to 12 billion tons of ice in a single day, the plan is dense with detail on Frank and its goals. Where other proposals, including those from Inslee and Senator Elizabeth Warren, depict expanded regulatory regimes and public spending aimed at spurring private investment, Sanders charts out a path to a hospitable global climate through Nordic-style social democracy. Quoting the plan, the scope of the challenge ahead of us shares some similarities with the crisis faced by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 1940s, Faced with battling a world war on two fronts, both in the East and the West, the United States came together and within 3 short years restructured the entire economy in order to win the war and defeat fascism. As president, Bernie Sanders will boldly embrace the moral imperative of addressing the climate crisis, end quote. So I think that's very interesting, and it follows on the calls from Naomi Klein, who's been in this studio talking to me and others here at KBOO, that a World War II style mobilization is necessary. That's the sort of thing that we need to imagine, frame up, and actually get down with if we're to prevent this accelerating global warming, which, as I've said many times, from my observation as a critic of journalism, as a an analyst of the news, I would say that it is even more of a crisis than anyone expected just a few years ago, and is moving more quickly than was guessed a decade ago, much more quickly. So that when I read predictions of what will happen in what year, I automatically in my mind dismiss the timeline and compress it to something happening much sooner. And that was the theme of my little spiel at the beginning, in which I pretended I was talking to the year 2029. I'd like to invite your calls, your comments, your questions. I'd like you to call in now, 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Continuing with the Huffington Post coverage, the plan opens with Sanders vowing to slash U.S. emissions 71% below 2017 levels by 2030 with 100% renewable electricity and zero emissions vehicles. He declares war on the fossil fuel industry with proposed bans on fracking, drilling on public lands, and all imports and exports of oil and gas, and threatens companies with civil and criminal charges for pollution and obstructing climate action. He pledges $200 billion to help developing countries reduce their own climate pollution by 36% in the next decade. And speaking for myself, the Koch brothers ain't gonna like that. The Koch brothers would like you to blame yourself and recycle more carefully than you already do. As if. But, you know, making moral suasions didn't stop Tojo, Mussolini, or Hitler, and recycling isn't going to stop climate disaster. Absolutely no way. Speaking statistically and or scientifically, it ain't happening. So I invite your calls and questions on what to do as a society. This obviously would be a near revolutionary change, or at least it would seem that way. Sanders, for all his talk of socialism, is actually not talking about overturning the social order. His plan actually has a huge amount of subsidies to to existing businesses, and I'm not criticizing that per se. It's an interesting plan. I have it in its detail. It runs to, it looks like about a dozen pages in the font that I used, and the font size, I should say, which is relatively small. So it's something that's been thought out, and it's really quite something. It would be a tremendous change. I think that it does, once again, bringing up Naomi Klein, it does address that idea that the whole society needs to be brought in on this, and that this needs to be used as a tool for several of the things that we need as a society, including the redistribution of wealth. We need those jobs, and we need more than jobs. We need a society that actually stands up for all of us and allows us to participate economically so that we are not constantly threatened with frittering away our lives under a freeway overpass somewhere, as so many people already have. And please, if you hear me say that, please don't take that as me putting you down. It could easily have happened to me, may happen to me yet, and may happen to any of us, and it works very effectively as a threat by the Koch brothers, and who I'm using conveniently as a stand-in for a very small oligarchic billionaire class. We are being crushed as a society by our oligarchy, and the first thing we need to do is acknowledge that this is not a democracy but an oligarchy. Witness, you know, again, the power of the Koch brothers in getting their policies through, not yours, The government knows what you want, and they don't care. You don't pay their bills. The billionaires do. They don't just pay for the re-election of politicians. They pay their relatives. And to be a politician in this country is to be a kingpin. Your relatives are going to get jobs. People are going to love you. Because there's a way to get that done, and that is kissing the boots of those billionaires. Number to call, 503-231-8187. I want to take calls, and I want to get into some of the details of the Green New Deal as promoted by the Sanders campaign. So I'll go to the first caller, Mike. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, Teresa. Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
So I want to disagree. Well, not really disagree. It's my perspective is a little different, and I look to you as a lot more knowledgeable and involved in issues that we're talking about. I've been around for a few years, and I felt when I first started to become aware of things like recycling and pollution and climate change that people have been that the truth has been out there since before I came along, probably since sometime in the 50s and 60s. They must have realized, and there were protesting then about the change in the economy and the effects that it had in industrial waste. And it's obvious if you look up most of the time that there's a change. So,
well, I think it may have sounded like I was saying don't recycle. I'm not. I think that I should recycle. We should all recycle carefully. That's just part of societal, cultural, industrial hygiene, right? But I am saying that it does not affect the ever-increasing. I mean, I think you'll agree with me. It's undisputed that the usage of plastic packaging of fossil fuels is going up and up. It's accelerating, indeed. We can't address that with individual. I mean, that specifically, we cannot address by individual actions. We must act collectively. So, whereas I believe in recycling as a social good, I also see that the powers that be insidiously try to put the blame for what they are doing on you. Let me give an example. One of the things that is taught in colleges very carefully, I would say it's inculcated to the point that people insist that it is true, is the idea that there was an organic transition from streetcars to automobiles, that people purposely chose to get around in automobiles just because that's the way capitalism works. And I think that the U.S. society might have gone that direction eventually or might not. It's hard to say, but there really was a conspiracy. There really was General Motors and Firestone and Phillips Petroleum really did conspire to scrap the streetcar systems in the United States so that their buses and cars could replace them, so that people would have to turn to petroleum-powered transportation rather than being able to use streetcars running off the electrical grid. This is something that is simply a part of history, and is also part of history that the judge famously fined them almost nothing. They fined them $5,000 when they were found to be guilty. They lost on appeal, too. They were definitely guilty. And there was a commission, the Snell Commission, that was formed to address the whole thing because people couldn't believe that the whole thing had actually gone down. It really did. And when Snell was asked about it a quarter century after that, he said that the streetcar system in the United States didn't die away. It was killed. And it was done by these corporations, which spent millions of dollars hiring their own sets of employees, task forces to go around the country and do things like put big deposits in local banks that were tied to the scrapping of the rail, that were tied to the purchase of General Motors buses, et cetera. So that's just one example of how things are decided for you by the oligarchs and are done so pretty much in secret.
Right. And the thing with the streetcars is fact, and it's been...
It is a fact, and it's also interesting to me...
I think Walt Disney was involved, and...
I don't know about Disney. I didn't say anything about Disney when I was researching this.
There's a great movie about it, action movie, L.A. Confidential, turned out to be a key part of it. The only part where I disagree with you is the urgency that we feel now, and there's no disagreement about the buildup, but that's, the increase of population, the increase of volume is just a natural progression. I'm saying that the environmentalists in the 60s and 70s, the urgency that they had then and the predictions, I haven't seen them change as much, and it's the general demeanor of the public where I'm disagreeing with what I'm seeing, the way it's pictured in the media, and the way that you were just saying that, it's more dire than we were told. And I'm just saying, like, if you were listening in the 70s, it wasn't as dire, but the timeline was still the same. They were saying we better fix it now, or else, time's running.
There were some truly visionary people then, some of whom are still around. So, I think that's a good point. Sure.
So, but I don't know how to fix it.
I'm interested in, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but you brought up how to fix it. I said last year or year before that it would appear that we had already gone over the tipping point, and I'm more convinced of that now. And it was a depressing thing to realize. I decided to share it anyway because I realized that everyone else is going to realize it at some point. We need to get on with what we are going to do about it. And I would say that we are going to face a gigantic and increasing disaster. We are facing it now. But I think that this Green New Deal, this idea, excuse me, of mobilizing the entire society and addressing other societal problems with it, basically by creating a new WPA through the Green New Deal, that would galvanize the society. I mean, it would just be so great for people to be able to get work. You know, during the Works Project administration, white people, and I hate to say it, I hate to hedge it, but people of color were not treated the same, but at least for white people, you could get a job, even if you had, a bit of a record, even if you had been busted for this, that, or the other in your youth. Now you can't. It's like once you've been tainted with the ever following curse of electronic criminal records, you just can't get work. And so a lot of the people who are on the streets and who are just giving up. The ones that you see most visibly, the people who just really just don't give a damn anymore and throw the trash anywhere, they gave up for a reason. They gave up because they tried every which way and were never going to be given entry, even past the point of having trouble getting sufficient food. So, well, that's where it's at. And I think that the Green New Deal will address that and bring an enthusiasm into the society that would be very... It would be good for all of us, I think. So I'm way behind it. But once it gets started, when it comes to actually fixing the climate, it's going to be too little too late, or it will seem so. And I think that, I really kind of hate to say this, I think that inevitably some geoengineering just to save our lives is going to have to happen. But I want that geoengineering to take place in the context of Green New Deal, because if that happens, if the Green New Deal like this happens, we will all be participating much more than we do now, and we'll be more informed than we are now, and any geoengineering can be decided on globally rather than set upon, well, the way that it's happening right now. The Pentagon is experimenting with it. I guarantee you the Pentagon is experimenting with it, and that's the opposite of democratic action. That's the opposite of allowing the people of the world to decide their fate. Okay. I'll go to the next caller, and thanks very much for calling in, Mike. Okay. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm talking about the Green New Deal and talking about the press coverage of it, which, as I was saying, is fairly skimpy. Going to go to the next caller in just a second, but first I want to impart a little bit of the preamble to Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal. He writes, "The climate crisis is not only the single greatest challenge facing our country, it's also the single greatest opportunity to build a more just and equitable future, but we must act immediately. Climate change," he writes, "is a global emergency. The Amazon rainforest is burning. Greenland's ice shelf is melting and the Arctic is on fire. People across the country and the world are already experiencing the deadly consequences of our climate crisis as extreme weather events like heat waves, wildfires, droughts, floods, and hurricanes upend entire communities, ecosystems, economies, and ways of life, as well as endanger millions of lives. Communities of color, working class people, and the global poor have borne and will bear this burden disproportionately. The scientific community is telling us in no uncertain terms that we have less than 11 years left to transform our energy system away from fossil fuels to energy efficiency and sustainable energy if we're going to leave this planet healthy and habitable for ourselves, our children, grandchildren, and future generations. As rising temperatures and extreme weather create health emergencies, drive land loss and displacement, destroy jobs, and threaten livelihoods, we must guarantee health care, housing, and a good-paying job to every American, especially those who have been historically excluded from economic prosperity." And there's more of the preamble, and maybe I'll get to it in just a moment. But first, I want to go to Carl, who's called in. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Carl. You still there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for having me on the air, Teresa.
Yeah, betcha.
I do agree that climate change is one of the biggest problems that our generation is facing, and I don't want to distract from the show too much, but I was just hoping to get an update on the status of KBOO. I recently went to savekboo.org, and I found that the webpage wasn't working for me, so I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you for your dedication.
Okay. I did savekboo.org previously. And because of things that are too complex to go into on the air, I handed it over to someone else who's going to fire it up shortly. So I'll say check in a few days, and I believe that you'll find it is back up. And someone whose agenda I very much agree with is about to make that happen. Now, going back to the Green New Deal, the scope of the challenge ahead of us shares similarities with the crisis faced by Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the 1940s. Battling a world war on two fronts, both in the East and the West, the United States came together and within 3 short years restructured the entire economy in order to win the war and defeat fascism. And it goes on to say that as president, Sanders will embrace this moral imperative. And I'll go back to that in just a moment, but Evelyn's on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi there. This is my pleasure to be on the line. So I'm really excited that you guys are talking about this today. I am actually a zero waste consultant, and I really, you know, I think one of the solutions, there's so many, and I recommend the book Drawdown. It talks about some of the big steps that we can do collectively to make a change to start really addressing CO2 emissions. And I would say zero waste, you know, we talk about recycling. Recycling's at the bottom of the list. We've got to reduce our consumption, reuse our products, and really start repairing the things that we already have. And when we start slowing down our lives and really working together, growing our own food, I think we're going to start seeing a big change. And obviously, driving less, that is a huge, huge component of this.
You know, that makes a lot of sense to me.
Absolutely. So if folks haven't heard about zero waste and the zero waste movement, that is really starting. It's picking up internationally, and we are working very hard to start bringing it to the U.S. Helping people do that.
Okay. I think you probably agree with me, though, that the billionaires
Absolutely.
Would like to put the blame for this on you. What do you think of Bernie's Green New Deal, or is this the first you're hearing of it?
I've been following it loosely. I haven't looked at the document myself yet, but I am extremely excited. That is exactly what we need. We need people working at the front lines to transform our economy. We really need to divest from fossil fuels and from any sort of technology that is not supporting a transition towards reducing our CO2 emissions.
Now, when it comes a collective action, what would you think of a federal law to transform packaging? In other words, to, for example, when you get a package delivered, to have a deposit on the box and the packing the same as you would have on a Coke bottle.
Absolutely. That is part of the zero waste movement, using durables. And that would require definitely, I would say, private sector investment to start shifting away from that. I personally like have my qualms with how much cardboard we use just for our boxes that are also, I would say, borderline single use. And the deforestation that's involved with that kind of material.
Oh, absolutely. So you know, I ordered something by mail just the other day, and I got the package, and it was just a little thing in a big package, and they did it for economies of scale, I'm sure. But by the time I'd taken it all apart and packed it into its different parts, you know, and part of it into the trash, I thought, you know, I've half ordered something that I need and half engaged in criminality with this.
Exactly. So we have to start thinking about durables and thinking creatively. I am optimistic. I think we are smart enough to come up with really wonderful solutions. We just need to get people on board and start creating, I would say, membership-based solutions so people can start to a greener way of living and a green economy. And also, you know, acknowledging that, you know what, two-day shipping, two-day delivery, as wonderful and convenient as that might be, it's killing our environment.
It's hardly necessary.
It's not sustainable.
Hardly necessary for anything short of, you know, perishable medicine. Well, thanks very much for those comments.
Thank you so much. Absolutely. My pleasure. Have a great day.
Time is 9:35 a.m. Pacific time. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm taking calls about Bernie Sanders' extensively imagined Green New Deal, which goes to I said a dozen pages. I think it was actually more than that. I thought I had this numbering the pages. Oh, here we are. I actually have about 18 pages in relatively small font of this Sanders Green New Deal. Going back to the text there, and I encourage you to call in while I'm reading this, by the way, 503-231-8187. It says, it mentions the three years of the Second World War in which the United States entirely transformed the country to mobilize to defeat fascism. Oh, maybe I should emphasize that. We all mobilized to defeat fascism. as president, he writes, Bernie Sanders will boldly embrace the moral imperative of addressing the climate crisis and act immediately to mobilize millions of people across the country in support of the Green New Deal. From the Oval Office to the streets, Bernie will generate the political will necessary for a wholesale transformation of our society with support for the frontline and vulnerable communities and massive investments in sustainable energy, energy efficiency, and a transformation of our transportation system. Then it goes on to say what kind of president we need, which I will skip. And this is very Bernie Sanders heavy, but this is the news you're not supposed to know. And there were two denials of the popular vote in 2016, I noticed. The first was the California primaries, which, please look up gregpalace.com and get the details, were stolen by the Clinton campaign, period. And the second was when the Trump campaign stole the entire election, not only through jiggering the intentionally racist Electoral College, but simply by denying votes on a racist basis to people of color, notably in Detroit, for example. An election, a choice that was stolen twice. First, you didn't get to choose Bernie. They made damn sure. And second, Trump took it with a minority. And here we are. Time is 9:37. And I go to caller 503-231-8187. And Julie's on the air.
Hi. Thank you, Teresa. I just thought it would be fun if you, I don't know if you're prepared to do this, but you introduced us to 2029 in a very negative way. And I thought it might be exciting, because you're so familiar with Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal, to introduce us to, I don't know, 2024 or something like that, with having some of the experiences that we would be going through and the ideas and the way our country would look if the Green New Deal came into being.
I love it. A utopia instead of a dystopia for once, a positive instead of a
yeah.
negative. I do think there needs to be more utopian writing. Yeah, that's a great... Okay, I'll do it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. What a great idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, the number to call, 503-231-8187. I hope the cough button is working this morning. I'll continue with this information from the Green New Deal and be going to the next caller in just a moment. So it says, as president, Bernie Sanders will launch the decade of the Green New Deal, a 10-year nationwide mobilization centered around justice and equity, during which climate change will be factored into virtually every area of policy, from immigration to trade to foreign policy and beyond. This plan outlines some of the most significant goals we have set and steps we will take during this mobilization. I should clarify that the campaign wrote this rather than Bernie Sanders personally. Starting with reaching 100% renewable energy for electricity and transportation by no later than 2030 and complete decarbonization by at least 2050, consistent with the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change goals, by expanding the existing federal power marketing administrations to build new solar, wind, and geothermal energy sources. You know, speaking for myself, I kind of love that, because the last thing I ever heard of the Federal Power Marketing Administration was when Dick Cheney was jiggering it and people were making obscene amounts of money by screwing Americans out of power. Number to call, well, Boris is next, and the number to call is 503-231-8187. How are you there, Boris?
I am here.
How you doing?
Well, not real good. I'm glad you're talking about this topic, but I would hasten to implore you not to believe words that come out of politicians' mouths, especially during the campaign cycle. Just a couple of days ago, I heard that Sanders had voted for the increase in the bloated U.S. military budget of $730-some million, the U.S. military being the biggest polluter on the planet. That represents, in my mind, some very blatant hypocrisy now that he's promoting this Green New Deal. I do not have a computer. I cannot look it up, but I invite you to do that and prove me wrong.
Okay, so you're saying Sanders voted for the funding bill, I take it, for that includes the military budget?
Well, I thought it was just a vote on the military budget, but maybe it was rolled into something else.
Well, let me just poke that into the news roll. I'll put Sanders vote military and see what I get. Computer away, let's see.
I hope you prove me wrong, but this just a couple of days
ago. Well, I don't know if I can prove you wrong, but just that I don't see anything coming up on the news roll about that. Now, I would not be surprised to hear that Sanders had voted for the general budget, including the Pentagon funding. I think that, you know, I can't speak for the Sanders campaign, but my guess is that his view on that is that so many things get rolled into those omnibus bills.
Well, that's something I hadn't considered. I thought it was strictly a vote on the increase in the military budget, but it very well could have been part of something else. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I think I hear you on that. I mean, Sanders is no saint, but
yeah, his foreign policy leaves real question marks, you know.
But I think he's probably to the left of just about anyone else that has a real shot at the presidency.
Yeah, isn't it a shame, though, that we've come down to this, to where, you know, somebody is, well, you know, he's not perfect, but maybe he's more left than some of these idiots that are...
Within that frame, I must say, I would be much more excited about the opportunity to vote for a Sanders than I would be to vote for, say, a Biden. But that's just my opinion, ain't
true.
It?
That's true. And while we're talking about candidates, I would like to point out to you in particular this wonderful little gay soldier, Buttigieg. Now this, I did hear, I know where the source was for this, but, you know, I call it the Obama syndrome. People have a tendency to do knee-jerk, you know, reactions to things like this. And, you know, they say, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a gay soldier for president? You know, isn't that progressive, and so on and so forth. Well, he was quoted as saying that if he gets elected president, one of his priorities is going to be to make sure that Chelsea Manning ends up in a gulag.
Yeah, so he said something pretty close to that.
Hypocrisy.
Yeah, I'm not really happy about Buttigieg because of that.
No.
Well, thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Talking about the Green New Deal, and specifically talking about the extensive rollout of a plan, a 10-year plan, which has, as I said, dozens of pages of details, a plan for transforming the United States society and economy on a World War II-style emergency basis, which would cost $15 trillion, and stacking up the estimates I've seen for climate collapse over that period of time, would possibly save far more. I think we'd be doubling our money in terms of saving the lives of our children and grandchildren. I guess it doesn't come down to money. Why bother doing that particular math? Either we're going to save our kids' lives or we're not. Either we have a moral bone in our body or we don't. We have to do something. And that's something, the first really extensive thought out something that I have seen about the Green New Deal is this this plan. That and Naomi Klein's work, and of course the efforts of organizations such as 350.org now I'm my brain just went flat. Existence, resistance, Extinction Rebellion. There, Extinction Rebellion. It was an X in there somewhere. Okay, and Dan is on there. Number to call: 503-231-8187.
I appreciate the news today. It's the truth, and it was expressed on your show, so I appreciate it. I just came back from hiking, and I can tell you a lot of these small towns within California don't have any recycling programs, and they even have, they try to keep their areas blue, but they don't even incorporate the basics. And you see all these plastic bottles everywhere, sometimes just going into the trash. They don't have a aluminum canister recycling areas. And you would think that, hey, it's a blue state, and it would lead in these little categories. So you can only imagine what's going on in the red state. And I agree with the previous caller, and that's actually what I called about with the military complex. You're going to try to revolutionize everything within the military complex that runs on gas and fuel. Good luck with that. You're almost out producing your product, which you sell in the world market and is your number one kind of market share in regards to the product line is, military stuff. And you're going to try to produce electric tanks or an aircraft carrier that actually takes, I guess, 56 miles to make a loop.
Well, I think peace might be our greenest option there.
I agree. And, I'm a believer of any plan that takes action and is supported by, that makes sense. It's just that I think that would be a hard sell. And it really starts from the military in regards to revolutionizing things, I hear, throughout history. And to see it coming from the consumer basis, public basis sector would be a very interesting thought, and it would be revolutionary. So I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that up. When it comes to the attitude, that's kind of what I love about this. This is not an apologetic plan. This is saying, look, we've got to transform everything. We've got to do it now. And hard sell? Hell yeah, it'll be a terrifically hard sell for the hardcore of Trump supporters. It's an absolute no, no matter what we do and no matter what we say. We will oppose them if we get this through. We will at first. I mean, for their sake, we really need to get it through. When I think of my extended relatives in Texas, Trump supporters, I love them. I've always loved them. They're so wrong. And we're going to have to fight them. There's no way around it. They've dug their trenches. They insist they're going to do this thing, and they're going to die on the hill of petroleum burning, of fossil fuels. And there's no logical reason for it. It's just it's a groupthink thing. It's just another example of how mobs can go absolutely wrong. Sometimes the people rise up at one and their voice as one, and their voice is just. Sometimes the people rise up as one, and they do horrible things. And Trump is one good example of that. But that's because Trump and people like him, the demagogues, have weaponized resentment. So we can peel some of those away, and we should try. And we should do the right thing for people like my extended relatives. Bless them. But we shouldn't expect that they're going to turn to our side. This is going to be a fight. And I love it that Bernie Sanders is unapologetic and says he wants he wants the climate oligarchs, he wants the oil oligarchs to hate him. He takes pride in that. That's good. That's what he should do. This is not something to compromise over. Not at all. Number to call, 503-231-8187. It's Kirk is next on the air. Hello, Kirk.
Hello.
Hi there.
Oh, hey. I'm happy you are talking about this really important subject here.
All right, then.
I just wanted to say that I think it's a really great plan that they're coming up with, and the goals in mind, I'm not sure if they're doable because of all of the power that the fossil fuel industry has. You were talking about the World War II era, and I think the only thing that I can say in the two years that Trump's been in there is that farm deal where he's saying that hemp can come back, maybe we can see that coming in and replacing some of the plastic. But it's just a really, like you were saying, it's a really hard fight, and we really have to do it. And it's just one of the most important things that I've heard today. So I'm glad you guys are talking about this and not apologizing for, you know, fighting the man. So I'm all for it.
Well, it brings up, when you bring up hemp, that and a number of other products are capable of producing a sort of biodegradable plastic-like substance, which could easily replace and probably should replace much of the packaging that we've gotten so used to today. I think the time will come when people will ask, you know, maybe while we're still alive, some of those people will ask, how could you do that? How could you make that plastic crap and just put it everywhere? It'll just be incomprehensible. It'll be sort of like,
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this, but I mean, back in the 20s, Henry Ford made a hemp car out of plastic, and it was nearly indestructible. But they, you know, the guys from Teflon or the rayon company, they decided that there was more profitability in using the petroleum plastic, and so all of the hemp plastics were just, you know, thrown in the desert like the electric car was. So they buried all of that stuff. But if anybody wants to check out Henry Ford making a hemp plastic car, it's him hitting a sledgehammer on top of the hood of a car and just bounces right off, because hemp plastic is amazing, and it there's so many things that you can do with it. And I hope that gets incorporated with his Green New Deal, because it's just such an amazing product, and we should have been using it for 100 years. It would be so far ahead and society if we decided to do that, 60 years ago, like we should have.
Thanks very much for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Been talking about the Green New Deal. I should probably just, I don't want to totally get in the habit of correcting everything that I hear, although I do want to point out that Teflon was actually developed as part of the nuclear bomb program at Los Alamos in World War II. Talking about the Green New Deal and talking about Bernie Sanders' rollout of an extensive transformation of society, a World War II level transformation, which would run 10 years and actually move the U.S. society towards greatly cutting our fossil fuel usage. Now, this includes some technological things. I probably have to really skip ahead into this to find it, but there's an idea of putting in underground lines that would be best for transmission of electricity as it is gathered by solar panels and by wind. That's a big part of it. You often hear, and it's the Koch brothers that promote this meme, by the way. If you're repeating it, please stop. But you often hear that solar and wind isn't constant and only works when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. This pretends that we don't have storage technologies, everything from water pressure and air pressure storage systems to batteries. We have batteries, folks. It's amazing how they can get people to repeat these nonsensical things. Only when the sun is shining can you directly collect the power from it, but of course you store it. And that technology is moving ahead by leaps and bounds. And I should think that if we have a 10-year transformation of society, even greater than what was done for the nuclear, the atomic bomb, that we will move forward on such technologies as zinc air batteries, etc., until they are usable, not only for storage, but I should think for electric aircraft. That's another thing that I hear a lot of scoffing about. There's a lack of imagination applied to that as well. Electric aircraft exist today. They don't have the range of jet aircraft. But even with today's technology, there are solutions that could allow us to use electric aircraft right now. For example, using the tremendous amount to launch an airplane, the tremendous amount of energy needed to launch an airplane off of the airstrip can simply be done literally with a power line. The power line snaps off when the airplane gets off the ground. The airplane can also jettison and parachute, or jettison and direct via drone technology, electric drone technology, its battery pack. So the takeoff, the batteries that are used for the takeoff can simply be not used at all, or dropped on the ground right after takeoff or during takeoff. So these things are quite possible, and the resistance towards imagining this is very much being funded at a very high level, approaching mind control by oligarchs such as, and I bring their name because they're easy to hate, the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers and their sneering smile. Ugh. Number to call, 503-231-8187, and we're getting up towards the top of the hour, and really haven't gotten through the preamble for Bernie Sanders' Green New Deal. And of course, this being the news you're not supposed to know, I want to bring it up because A, it's something that the oligarchs are going to hate and are going to downplay and are going to direct their fully owned corporate media and fully owned politicians to deflect, because we need this. So I'll go to the next caller, and the number to call is 503. Okay, we have time for one more caller, 503-231-8187. Now, going back to the Green New Deal, reaching 100% renewable energy for electricity and transportation by no later than 2030, and complete decarbonization by at least 2050, ending unemployment by creating 20 million jobs needed to solve the climate crisis. Now, speaking for myself, that would be a tremendous boon for the society in a number of ways. That would begin to ease so many of the tensions that we now feel and make for a better quality of life. That is redistribution of wealth, and it needs to happen yesterday. Returning to the text, these jobs will be good-paying union jobs with strong benefits and safety standards in steel and auto manufacturing, construction, energy efficiency, retrofitting, coating, and server farms and renewable power plants. We will also create millions of jobs in sustainable agriculture, engineering, a reimagined and expanded civilian conservation corps, and preserving our public lands. Directly invest a historic $16.3 trillion public investment towards these efforts, in line with the mobilization of resources made during the New Deal and World War II, but with an explicit choice to include Black, Indigenous, and other minority communities who were systematically excluded in the past. That was something I was bringing up before. That's part of whiteness, thinking that you enjoy your superior wealth because of superior qualities. Nope. It was because of nasty racist political decisions like the exclusion of the Black and community and people of color from access to the GI Bill and to the WPA and et cetera, and on as back as far as you can think. But returning to the text, a fair transition for workers. This plan will prioritize the fossil fuel workers who have powered our economy for more than a century, and who have too often been neglected by corporations and politicians. We will provide 5 years of unemployment insurance, a wage guarantee, housing assistance, job training, health care, pension support, and priority job placement for any displaced worker, as well as early retirement support for those who choose it or can no longer work. Declaring climate change a national emergency, we must take action to ensure a habitable planet for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren. We will do whatever it takes to defeat the threat of climate change. So I find that enormously lifting to read, and I encourage you to find it by looking up Bernie Sanders and the Green New Deal on a search engine. And you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. via our great big red and white Eiffel Tower on the West Hills at 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Community Advisory Board will meet Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59. Coming up next, it's a Heather McCoy Show. At 11, Between the Covers host Jake Ramos speaks with Michelle Penaloza about her collection of poems, former possessions of the Spanish Empire. And at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures. SW Concert speaks with Gary and Ann Lundgren of Ashland, who have produced an independent feature entitled Phoenix, Oregon, a comedic look at midlife struggles in the rural Northwest. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.FM or on iTunes and Google Play. KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.FM or use our mobile app and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel in Portland. Bonds Over Borders is a benefit for Innovation Law Lab, a Portland-based organization that works to increase legal access for immigrants at detention centers, both locally and around the country. There will be live stand-up sets from Adam Passy and Dan Weber and live music by Pedro Queriega. Again, that's Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel.